This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Camellia, Juliet Jacobs and Kelly Anissa.
And if you've just joined us, we were discussing how fitness trackers may harm your health. So someone texted in to say, I found that the fitness tracker sometimes does not show accurate results, hence I've stopped using it after a while.
Keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or call us 03-7733-2900. But now we're moving on to something else, Juliet.
Yep. So a joint report by the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, or Suhakam, and Fortify Rights, titled Sold Like Fish, was just released yesterday. It is a 112-page report which documents human rights violations perpetrated against the Rohingya Muslims who were trafficked from Myanmar and Bangladesh to both Thailand and Malaysia from 2012 to 2015.
So a quick refresher, back in 2012, Malaysian authorities discovered signs of torture and imprisonment near the village of Wan Kalian, where at least 28 camps linked to human trafficking were found. The Malaysian government recently created a Royal Commission of Inquiry to investigate this case, and that was one of the catalysts for this report to be completed and made public.
This multi-year joint investigation included more than 270 interviews with eyewitnesses, survivors, human traffickers, government officials and others from 2013 to 2019. At the launch of the report yesterday, Suhakam Commissioner Gerald Joseph said, quote-unquote, this report provides new evidence that we hope will help ensure justice for victims, accountability for perpetrators, and policy changes to strengthen the Malaysian and regional response to human trafficking.
Yeah, so earlier this morning, I caught up with Matthew Smith, who is the CEO of Fortify Rights, who co-authored this report. And here he is giving us a breakdown of that new evidence that Gerald spoke of, and also, you know, just walking us through their findings.
So, you know, this has been a huge report. I think it's been years in the works. Tell me a little bit about that before we get started on the findings.
Well, you know, back in 2013, we started to come into contact with survivors of human trafficking, Rohingya survivors of human trafficking. They had fled Myanmar, had been deceived by human trafficking gangs, were being held in these torture camps in Thailand and Malaysia. And over the course of several years, the trade in Rohingya increased dramatically. And so we were documenting this. We were in communication with the really wonderful people at Suhakam. And together we decided to do a joint investigation. And that's really how it came about.
Okay, so it's resulted in a 121-page report, and you know it's been divided into some chapters. Let's walk through the findings of the report, Matthew. So I know Chapter 1 documents abuses against captives held at sea by human traffickers. Could you explain what happened, you know, your findings based there?
Yeah, sure. So we were, you know, over the course of this three-year period, at least about 170,000 people took to the sea on boats, and they were facing severe violations by human trafficking syndicates at sea. You know, traffickers were holding them in conditions of enslavement, depriving them of adequate space, depriving them of adequate food, essentially treating them as property on these boats. Some people spent as long as 2 months at sea waiting to disembark from these ships. It was quite a brutal scenario at sea. And once on shore, they, you know, there's a chapter in the report that also documents the violations they faced on shore. Again, at sea, there were killings, there was even rape at sea and all these violations. Once they got on shore, they were transferred to these human trafficking camps. Most of them were in remote areas. We also documented sort of, you know, semi-structured camps with, you know, even in some cases, some buildings and some construction with concrete, but most of them were remote. They had cages. People were being held in huge numbers, again, treated like property being bought and sold. People were tortured. And so this was something that was going on for a very long period of time. What we tried to communicate in the report was just the massive scale and the really brutal severity of what was taking place.
Yeah, and I think on that note of brutality, your findings found that traffickers inflicted pain using pipes, bats, clubs, belts, you know, just horrible things, threats, intimidation, all sorts of, terrible things.
Exactly. This was a business, and it was a cold, calculated, brutal business that a transnational criminal syndicate, and by syndicate, I basically mean a group of individuals and organizations or networks that are all kind of working toward a common criminal interest in this case. There were huge amounts of money being exchanged. You know, there was estimated $50 to $100 million annually.
Wow.
Each individual Rohingya was basically being sold for about 2,000 US dollars. At the time, it would have been around 7,000 ringgit per person. Only a very small amount of that has ever been accounted for. There were human trafficking trials in Thailand that tracked some of the finances, and that's essentially how the Thai authorities were led to a senior general in one case, Lieutenant General Mana. And this is a guy who had received more than $1 million U.S. in bank transfers from a human trafficking syndicate. And this is how the authorities had an indication he was in on it. That type of investigation has not happened in Malaysia. And what we're encouraging the authorities to do here is to follow the money. And there is evidence available and there are records. And so this is very possible.
And one of the other things, I think maybe you can say it's a main point of contention, was that, you know, the day following the discovery of the campsite, a senior police officer actually ordered the compound destroyed.
That's right. This comes out in Chapter 3 of the report. And it was a highly suspect move for anybody to do. I mean, this is a place where there was a mass grave. There were people being held in cages. There were armed guards with lookout posts. And it was clearly a crime scene. And the authorities made it clear in their testimonies to Suhakam for this report. The authorities made it clear that they did know almost immediately that this was a crime scene. This was a place where criminal activity was taking place. And so it's very suspicious indeed that a senior officer ordered the entire site to be destroyed the next day, essentially destroying evidence that could have been used in an investigation.
Right. And then, you know, it was discovered in January, but, you know, they only made it public much, much later.
Indeed. And this is also raises very serious questions. You know, if the authorities discover a mass grave and they discover a place where a human trafficking syndicate is buying and selling human beings, enslaving, you know, holding them in conditions of enslavement, treating them like property, committing brutal violations, you know, to just destroy the site and then not send in a forensic team for several months is very, very suspicious. There were forensic specialists who testified for this report that due to the delays, they were unable to do an effective postmortem examination on the bodies because of the decomposition of the bodies had reached such a level that it made any sort of postmortem conclusions very difficult. So again, a situation where the delay would have hampered the investigation.
Mm-hmm. Just to be very clear about the time frame, you know, they discovered it on January 19th, but it was only made public in May 25th of both, of course, in 2015. So more than 4 months after the initial discovery and the actual revelation. So that is a long time, and a lot could have happened in that time.
Absolutely, and you know, a lot did happen during that time. We had indications that Wang Kalian wasn't the only site on the Malaysia side of the border.
Right.
And on the Thai side as well, you know, if you look at the numbers of people that were being bought and sold over this 3-year period, and massive, massive figures. And the notion that, you know, 30 some graves on the Thai side of the border, and then of course, 139 graves on the Malaysia side of the border. This, in our view, only scratches the surface. We were interviewing people who were in these camps and who were telling us, in some cases, they were in the camps for extended periods of time, months, and they were telling us people were dying every single day. People were testifying that they themselves had buried numerous bodies. And so I think there's a lot more investigation that the authorities can and should do.
Okay. And I mean, just going on that, what you're talking about, eyewitness testimony, Chapter 5 of this report actually focuses on that and, correct me if I'm wrong, suggests official complicity or direct involvement of government officials.
Indeed. There are a lot of people who survived this modern-day slave trade witnessed a lot. And many people on the Thai side of the border, what the authorities were doing there was they would essentially, when you know, these boats operated by human traffickers would arrive with massive, essentially human cargo is how they were treating it, mm-hmm. the authorities would take all of the Rohingya into custody, and then they were actually selling them back to the human trafficking syndicates. In some cases, people went through that cycle multiple times. So they came into Thailand, they were brought to immigration detention, then sold to traffickers, and then the Thais raided the camp, arrested them again, sold them back to traffickers, and it just happened multiple times. So the authorities were in on this. I mean, we know from the human trafficking trials that the authorities were in on it, but the Thai court only convicted 9 government officials. And based on what we know, there would have been a lot more people involved in this. And I would argue on both sides of the border, in Malaysia as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you are saying that further investigation is needed to determine the extent of the Malaysian authorities, I suppose, their responsibility or involvement in this trafficking industry as well.
Absolutely. You know, we were very excited at the news that the government of Malaysia had established a Royal Commission of Inquiry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, being the highest level of inquiry, this commission will have significant powers to investigate and to collect information. Mm-hmm. And so this is a really strong move. We are hopeful that the Commission of Inquiry will lead to some justice and accountability.
So basically, you know, the available evidence, it does indicate that the authorities in Malaysia and Thailand have not investigated or held perpetrators to account, I guess, for the full extent of the crimes that have actually happened.
Indeed, there were 4 non-Malaysians who were arrested and prosecuted.
That's right. Yeah.
And the Malaysian authorities informed, the police informed Suhakam that, you know, they had requested Thailand to extradite, I believe it was 7 people who were in prison in Thailand for trafficking. Mm-hmm. And they cited that, the Thai failure to extradite those people as their investigation essentially coming to an end. But there's no indication, as far as we know, that the authorities, Malaysian authorities, traveled to Thailand to speak with those people who were convicted. That would be the easiest way for them to collect information. They don't need to wait for Thailand to send them to Malaysia.
Right.
So it's pretty clear that at a high level, someone decided that there wouldn't be an in-depth investigation into this, mm-hmm. and that should be looked into for sure.
Okay. And I know that the last chapter of the report actually is kind of examining the legal implications of, you know, the violence perpetrated against these poor people. And what are you sort of hoping to, what are you hoping to employ to examine this?
Yeah, well, I mean, what we came to realize, and we worked with a extraordinary legal team on the analysis, what we came to realize was that this was essentially an attack on a civilian population. It was a transnational attack. And under international criminal law, an attack on civilians doesn't necessarily have to be a military attack. Mm-hmm. These types of things can happen, of course, during peacetime. And so we came to realize the evidence pointed to crimes against humanity. And when we collected the evidence, we realized we had reasonable grounds to believe that crimes against humanity had been perpetrated against Rohingya in Malaysia and in Thailand from 2012 to 2015. And these are the most serious crimes that can be committed. So murder as a crime against humanity, rape and sexual violence, torture as a crime against humanity. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, you know, it's a widespread and systematic attack on a civilian population.
Yeah.
And the authorities in Malaysia recently acceded to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, which was an extraordinary moment, in our opinion, for the people of Malaysia. This is a fantastic move for the government. And we're not expecting at this point for prosecutions to happen at the ICC. Mm-hmm. We're not expecting a referral to the ICC of this case because the Malaysian authorities at this point seem to be quite serious about undertaking an investigation. And so the ICC would really only get involved if it's a court of last resort, they call it. So they would only get involved if there was impunity here in Malaysia. So right now the authorities are doing the right thing, and we're going to do everything we can to help them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, for, you know, the survivors, the ones who actually survived this, or even the families of the victims who lost their lives in all of this, what can be done for them?
Well, we do think reparations are in order. And this is something that Mr. Gerald Joseph, the commissioner at Suhakam, mentioned at the press conference yesterday. And there's some recommendations in the report about it as well. But to the extent that, certainly to the extent that the state, members of you know, state security forces or other agencies were involved in this, the survivors would certainly be due reparations. But regardless, I think that should be happening with survivors of this trade, of these abuses. But on top of that, there's a lot Malaysia can do, providing basic protections for refugee communities here in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a lot of sympathy and even solidarity with the Rohingya community. But right now, the Malaysian government doesn't even know how many Rohingya are in Malaysia because they haven't formally registered and provided identification documents. And Rohingya are not being registered by the UN here in Malaysia, so they don't have refugee status. Mm-hmm. So these are things that the authorities, I think, can and should do.
Okay, I guess, you know, what are your hopes for this report then, you know, that people are going to understand this situation a bit better, you know, really understand the atrocities that happened in our own, in our own country?
Indeed, it is important to raise awareness about this, and it is important for, you know, the people of Malaysia, I think, to, and from other countries as well, from the international community, to know the extent to which, you know, a human trafficking syndicate is able to operate in Malaysia and in Thailand, for that matter. So raising awareness publicly is very important. We also presented this report to the Royal Commission of Inquiry, and we are planning to cooperate with the Royal Commission of Inquiry. Whatever they need or want that we can provide, we will do that. And it's my understanding also that the report has been presented to other relevant authorities in Malaysia. And ultimately, you know, these are crimes that never should have taken place, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure they never take place again here.
Okay. I mean, just one last thing. Do we actually know what's happening to the survivors from Wang Kalian? Do we actually know where they are right now, or what's happening to them?
We don't know where they are, and that's a big problem. They were arrested. There were 38 people who were arrested, treated like criminals, survivors of this horrific violence and abuse, and they were locked up in immigration detention here. And this is inconsistent with Malaysian law. Under Malaysian law, survivors of human trafficking are afforded protection. And that didn't happen. And so, but beyond that, we don't actually know where they are now. And I think that there will be some efforts underway to find the people who were arrested in January 2015, mm-hmm. but also to connect with other survivors of these camps.
So that was Matthew Smith, the CEO of Fortify Rights, which is a non-profit human rights organization that works to prevent and remedy human rights violations. And together with Suhakam, they came up with the report talking about, you know, this whole incident. So, yeah.
And it's interesting to note that the report shows that the experiences of most Rohingya and Bangladeshis involved in this case meet the definition of human trafficking, not human smuggling. So both Suhakam and Fortify Rights agree that the survivors deserve protection under Malaysian law as survivors of trafficking. In the case of the Rohingya, survivors should also be protected as refugees. It's quite tragic that we don't know how many of them, you know, where many of them are now.
Yeah, so the Royal Commission of Inquiry is expected to submit its final report in June, so we'll keep you updated, and hopefully the inquiry will identify those believed to be responsible for these crimes and to seek criminal prosecutions in Malaysia, as well as individual accountability measures beyond criminal prosecutions as recommended by Suhakam and Fortify Rights.
Yeah. So, we'll keep you updated. Definitely, I think a lot's going to come out in June, and I think it's going to be quite...
3 months between now and then.
Yeah.
Or 2 months.
2 months there. Yeah. A lot's going to come out, I'm quite sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Juliet will be tracking this story definitely. Quite closely, for sure.
Definitely. I feel very strongly about this.
Indeed. Yeah. So, that's all the time we have, folks. You can keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're also on Facebook. Just look up BFM BFM, The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcasts from bfm.my, from our BFM app, or look us up on Spotify as well. Coming up at 3 p.m., it's Front Row with Sharmila Ganesan. She will be speaking with comedian and storyteller Aman Ali about being a Muslim in America. For now, here's Give Me Some Truth by John Lennon on the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.